Is this, Woody, can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay, we're on. Truth Quest with Melody on KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community supported radio. And we're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And if you would like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.givemesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And I want to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and none nor my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And tonight I've got a very special guest who's come back. It's Don Nikoloff. And I've got a sidekick tonight, William Wallace, kind of a DJ in training. And what we're going to – I'm going to let Don kind of introduce himself again. Every time I try to – get his info so I can read it, it doesn't let me do that. So I think you can do a better job at it anyways. You there, Don?
I'm there, Melody. How are you this evening?
Fine. How are you? You have something on your website that doesn't let me do it. So to copy it so I can have a little piece of cheat sheet here so I can read through it. So.
Oh, all you have to do is go to my website and click on About Us.
I did. I went there, but every time I usually try to just copy it and just bring it in so that I'm not taking up any space on this computer. So, but that's okay. I'll let you do it, and I think you'll do the best job anyways.
Well, I'm a professional musician, music composer, producer, all of that stuff, you know, that good, fun stuff. And I guess because I have an above-average skill in orchestrating, you know, connecting the dots in music and making a large ensemble of instruments sound good, or mixing and engineering, sort of creating the whole thing from scratch, I have an innate talent to sort of transmute that into investigating, and I'm rather intuitive, and so I get a hunch that something's not right or something's worth looking into. I dig until I find what I'm looking for, and I've become a professional writer for the Idaho Observer. They honor my work in terms of being an investigative journalist, and I've basically found a niche in exposing the fraud in history, the things that you and I were taught in school, and of course your listeners, are not exactly what they would want us to to really believe. And that's the whole thing, is they teach us things and we believe these things. And if we look very hard at them and sort of go down the rabbit hole, as we say, in investigative journalism, looking beneath the surface to find out what might be lurking underneath the rocks and in the holes, usually we find that our hunches are accurate and that there is a trail that we can find the truth. And so I've sort of given a taken an oath and given a promise to the Creator that I would expose the corruption on this planet and right the wrongs that have been done. The first step is showing people what has been done. And I sort of stumbled into, not that this is any craving I have to go into genealogies of political figures, but they're the ones running the planet. And so it makes sense to know who the enemy is and what they're actually doing to look into their backgrounds. And I find it rather compelling that 5 out of 5 times I've hit a bullseye on the first 5 politicians that I've looked at. Actually, I could up that number, but I haven't published that information yet.
Well, maybe as you found that once you started looking at these backgrounds and those that have been perpetrating this sort of thing, maybe you found that, or they had found that they could get away with it so easily that they figured they could pull it off on just about anyone. Do you think?
Well, they pulled it off on the whole world. You're very right. You know, if you set it up that way. The hard part of revealing these types of truth to people is in their disbelief or in their denial that these things could even be so. Who would, you know, you grow up learning anyone can become the president of the United States. So a lot of kids grow up with this ambition that they would like to lead the country, or they would like to do something important for their country. And as our experiences become more diverse as we travel around the world, some of us are fortunate enough to have made it out of our hometowns and out of our states and even out of the country. And we've gone to other parts of the world and seen that life there is not exactly as it has been written or as we've been indoctrinated to believe. Again, it's this belief system. Those of us who have been to other parts of the world kind of know that things are not necessarily the way we were taught they were or they are. And so we have a responsibility to see things really the way they are. And if we don't like it, of course, we can do something about it. This is a free will universe, and we're basically living on a prison planet. And I resent the fact that that's been going on for so long, as many of us truth seekers do. That's part of what drives us. If I asked you that question, I think you would say basically the same thing. You do what you do because you're interested in bringing the truth to people.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that I've run across in some of the media, And I can't blame them in their direction that they go, but I think you show us by example that you can't really take documented material as factual. I mean, it's a good basis to start with, but it's like what you're doing is you're digging deeper to find out that, you know, just because it's in print doesn't make it true.
Mm-hmm.
And our media today, particularly, really likes to kind of put that out there, and we don't question a lot of the numbers. We don't question a lot of the facts that go behind that, what's being put out in our faces. And this goes back to historically as well. And we're finding out now that a lot of the events that we thought may have been happened a certain way, didn't really. It was somebody's viewpoint or somebody trying to bend the truth in the direction they want it to go historically.
Mm-hmm. You know, you made a very good point there, too, and I might embellish it a little bit by saying that, and this is a great visual for anyone that's having trouble understanding some of the information that's going to come out during this interview tonight, or accepting that what I'm saying is true. When you go into a bookstore, you either have something in mind that you're going there to look for. You might be going in that bookstore because you know they have great map books, or that they have great dictionaries. Now you expect the dictionary to show you the meaning of words, the pronunciation of the words, how to use the word in a sentence, the things that dictionaries do. And you might look at what a dictionary has to offer if you're fortunate enough to be able to open it and look at how it's laid out. Is it very general, or does it get into specifics? Are there numerous definitions for each word? You tend to make a choice on the basis of how it fits your need. When you're looking for a self-help book, you go to the section that's marked self-help books, or you go to reference books. I was using the dictionary as an example, but there are various types of reference books. When you go to an art, the art section, you expect either to see examples of art, or maybe a book that teaches you how to draw or to paint or to sculpt. It teaches you something about the art form, or a music book. You could find a book of songs, or you could find a book that teaches you how to play an instrument, or how to read music, or how to write music, or how to listen to music. So the reference books serve that kind of purpose. And then they have fiction books. Now you expect most or all of the books in that section to not be true. That's a given because it's labeled. You see, we use labels and we respond to labels, and they know that. So it makes it easier for you to find a story, and then you look for the type of story, and you begin looking at covers and titles, or when you're looking specifically for a book, you know why you're there. If you're browsing, you might come across a section where it says nonfiction. Now, I can tell you from what I've learned from research that what I see in those nonfiction sections should be in the fiction section or in the garbage can. Should have never made it there, okay? Because a lot of what is being peddled as nonfiction is more fictional than those fictional books.
Well, I've also heard, you know, certain authors state that sometimes it's much easier to write something in a fiction, even though it can have primarily truth in it, just to avoid certain liabilities or other ramifications by putting it in a form that says it's, you know, nonfiction.
Yeah, and what are you alluding to? Are you saying that writing the truth in a nonfiction form is less dangerous?
Probably.
Why should the truth be dangerous? That's my question, you see. And it's from that viewpoint that one has the courage to find the truth and then present it to folks and to promote it, which is what I'm doing right now.
Well, so, and there's another factor that I've become a little bit aware of lately, and that's also, you know, I've been going back and reviewing a lot of old science fiction, and I'm finding out so much in that science fiction is now based on truth or has plenty of truth in it. And I don't know whether it's comes under that, you know, the idea that it's easier to present it as science fiction, and or is it part of a programming technique?
It's propaganda. It's mind control, and it's very subtle. You're expected to accept that the majority of movies are based on some story premise, okay, on some theme. And that anything that's outside of the realm of your experience must be fiction. So therefore, when a movie starts with something that you just don't see every day, a car flying off the top of a building and beginning to fly, and it flies over a body of water and lands on the other side, and the police chase continues, you know, you've seen movies open with scenes like that. I mean, they're totally ridiculous, but this is the ultimate excitement or the ultimate suspense beyond belief, okay? And so it builds up this belief system in the individual, and it really affects your subconscious, because the subconscious mind takes all of that in, and it says, well, this is just a movie, but I'm here to be entertained. I'm here to have the limits or the boundaries of my everyday reality stretched or expanded for me. Rather than you do it on your own, you're allowing someone else to do it for you. We allow the government to do everything for us. We allow the church to do everything for us. We allow the banks to do everything for us. We allow the corporations to do everything for us. Every aspect, and education too. Every aspect of your life is somebody doing something for you. And we become very lazy and apathetic and complacent because of this. By design, okay, it's known that to provide us with something under certain circumstances or restrictions or laws, that then we are halfway to full compliance with anything that they tell us to do.
All right, Don, this is William. What do you think makes the, what is the trait and characteristic in people that makes them or allows us to just allow everybody else to do it for us? What is that in us that we'd just let somebody else do it? Why don't we do it ourselves?
Programming. It's not our natural nature to be that way. We've been programmed to be that way from birth. You start off with a smack on your rear end. In some cases, held upside down by your ankles while you're smacked on the rear end. The umbilical cord is severed, and then you're on your own. You're a property of the state.
Kind of a rude awakening, huh?
Yeah. You know, the rules are enforced right away. And if the parents are not aware of what happens to you, when you're taken out of the room, you're injected with a number of toxins that are going to affect you for the rest of your life. And then you're going to have to comply with the rules. And they usually happen via your age. You know, it used to be when you're 5, you have to start going to school. You go to kindergarten. Then you go to first grade and second grade and third grade. And if you're lucky enough to keep progressing like that, you go all the way through high school. And then you're told to be a success or to be enabled to get a better job, you have to go to college. And so you subscribe to that mentality that the only thing worth learning is how to get the best job. So you go to college. Many times you find out, like I did, when you're in college, you knew more from what you learned in high school than what they're teaching you in college. And that college is really easy. It's what's difficult about college is paying for it. Because it's a racket. Okay? When you learn the ins and outs of why certain universities cost $100,000 a year or $60,000 a year, what is it about what a person can say to you that makes it worth that much more money? You know, if you really think about it, there's not a whole lot. In fact, when they're lying to you about history and you're majoring in history, they're teaching you an illusion, and you're paying a lot of money for an illusion when you're studying history at Harvard University or Oberlin College in Ohio, which is a $60,000 a year liberal arts college. That's as close to communism as you're going to get.
Liberal propaganda.
Yeah, you see, so, to answer your question, this is all built into the system. And what does it bow down to, or what does it subscribe to? Admiralty law, the law of the sea, which is how they rule the world, how they've always ruled the world, with ships that transport food and goods to other parts of the world that don't have those things. They create a market for them, and then people depend on those things. And often when they don't do business with them, they overtake the country by creating a war. You see, it's survival of the fittest. Only they've tried to sort of mask it, and that's why you have secret societies. They mask all of this in a cloak of obfuscation, so that you really don't see what's going on. These decisions are made on your behalf for you, really without your knowledge. And you should be thinking, we should all be thinking about who's making these decisions for us, because we were created to live in a free will universe. The whole universe was created as a free will universe. Now, that doesn't mean free chaos. God gave us 10 laws. The United States government is close to 23 million laws. Can you name 10 of them? You know? When you think about it, why do we need 23 million laws? If we practiced the first two commandments that God gave us, there wouldn't be any problems. You wouldn't need those laws. So these people are just coming up with a bunch of reasons to take control. And you can see it now, today, very clearly, that they've taken God out of the schools. They've taken God out of the courts. They still have God on their fiat money system, their illusory money, their Federal Reserve note, says in God we trust. But nowhere else is God allowed. Even in the churches, they're taking God out.
Yeah, but it doesn't say what God.
Well, yeah, too. You know, we could do several shows just on that topic. But I'm trying to answer William's question in the best way. You know, this is all connected.
Well, you know, one of the things that is interesting about what you're doing right now and what you're writing in a number of your articles in the Idaho Observer, because you've covered a number of different presidents and dignitaries' lives and shown that, you know, so again, some of the accepted truth and information is not necessarily what meets the eye. But some of the examples that to me just recently kind of stood out as if anybody had been watching some of the film footage off of the plane that hit the Esalen. What was it? Echelon building there, or building complex there in Austin. And when you saw the damage that little plane did to that building, the first thing that struck me was, wow, that small plane sure did a lot of damage for such a small plane. Now, I'm not saying that I'm right, but that reminded me of what you were talking about initially on some of the opening scenes in some movies where they actually put a lot of explosives into these cars, and then they do something totally abnormal in because of its impact and what it's, you know, how they want to begin their film.
And yeah, why didn't that small building fall down?
Well,
it's longer than the World Trade Center. Why didn't it fall down?
Right, and another one that to me was a huge clue was that it was the Echelon building.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the building wasn't prepped before the accident with demolition charges.
But yeah. The plane might have been. You know, if anybody understands what Echelon project is, it Project Echelon or just Echelon?
Well, Echelon is the program that triggers the keywords that they use to spy on you. You know, to wiretap or capture your electronic data. Let's put it that way. Because what you hear and what they're actually doing may be two entirely different things.
Now, granted, I mean, if you're watching the regular media, I'm not quite sure what they're saying now about that whole incident or if they are explaining it much further. But, boy, I'll tell you what's starting to come out with all the questions since then. In the alternative medias, it's starting to look pretty fishy, like a lot of other kind of events.
Like Fort Hood.
Yeah, that one I want you to get into, because I'd like the audience to hear a little bit scenario on this one.
Well, Fort Hood was a false flag event. We know that, okay? And I guess we should define what a false flag event is. The burning of the Reichstag building in 1938 was a false flag event in Berlin, Germany, that sort of rocketed Hitler into his role as the dictator of Germany and the evil invader of Europe. And most people know that story. What they don't know is that these things are planned. Very well, that could have been planned out of the city of London. In fact, I would venture to guess that it was, and that they used the Tavistock Institute for Human Studies as a means to how they were going to orchestrate all of this. All of the dictators and despots that played roles in World War II were created by the same group of people. The Bolshevik Revolution is another example of that, okay? False flag events are events like that. 9/11 was a false flag event. The Murrah building was a false flag event. The Waco disaster, where they murdered those Branch Davidians, and that's what it was, murder.
How about Ruby Pearl Ridge. Harbor? Was that...
Pardon me?
Was Pearl Harbor a false flag?
Pearl Harbor was a false flag event, absolutely. It had been printed, several stories had been printed prior to December 7th, 1941, in the Hilo Herald. And the headlines on the 6th of December, 1941, were, Pearl Harbor may be attacked. Now, no one seemed to notice that. Ralph Epperson did, and he saved a copy of that newspaper, and he's got it on his website to this day,
right,
on the home page. So I didn't print the newspaper. You didn't. I certainly didn't write the story, but it fits, you see. Because we were basically blackmailed into getting into World War II to feed the military-industrial complex.
Well,
and it, you know, it followed the war to end all wars, which was World War I. Didn't end all wars. It was just something that sounded nice to say at the time. So,
well, one of the things that... Another thing to be kind of watchful of when these major events take place, like 9/11, like Oklahoma City, is often you'll find how the story evolves, and unless you capture and hold on to this either on film or audio or some form or fashion, you're going to find that they really change the story a lot. Now, granted, they may not have all the information, whatever, but at the same time, it seems like, you know they'll come up with an answer within minutes. I mean, this is one of the problems with that plane crash in Austin. It's like they had this guy's name and all the information on this guy. Well, if that plane blew up, how did they know all this information right away? I mean,
it was a false flag operation, and all the media was told what they're to say. How did all these anchors become crack reporters out in the field so fast? How did they all get the same information? I'm doing research on many topics that have been there for lots of people to study, and I'm bringing out totally new information. Why is that? I'm not getting it from the media, am I? I'm not getting it from the government per se, and no one is feeding me information. I'm finding it. I'm going out there, and I'm turning over the rocks, and I'm telling the snakes to get out of the way so I can dig deeper, okay, like I did with the Fort Hood incident, which is another false flag. For those that are oblivious to what happened on November 5th, 2009, there were three separate shooting sprees going on that base. And the base was primarily being used as a transportation shipping out point for soldiers going to various wars around the world. And there was a processing center there, and it's alleged that this Major Hassan, who was Nidal Malik Hassan, went nuts. Now, this guy was a psychotherapist, or a psychiatrist, you could say. That was his medical background. And he killed some people. I think 13 people ended up dying. 30 people were wounded. 13 is interesting.
Yeah.
All of these shootings end up with 13 deaths. You had 13 in Virginia Tech. So happens that Major Hassan went to school at Virginia Tech. So happens there's an underground base at Blacksburg, Virginia, where they're into heavy MK Ultra mind control. And so many of the students there fall under that at one time or another.
Doesn't Langley have some tie to that too?
Well, all of the military institutions are involved in it somewhere. It goes on in many places. But he was involved with Bethesda, I should say Walter Reed Medical Center, actually.
Okay.
He was in a program there. And thing is, I brought all this out in my research. This guy wasn't, it doesn't appear he was properly certified. He was working in an intelligence wing, okay, that was involved in very heavy mind control. So a false flag event has to have elements of mind control in it, built into how the event goes down and how they report it and how they cover it up. What was really going on at Fort Hood is rather significant, and the shooting was not the major event. They made it a media event. You see, because guns and knives and cars crashing and explosions is what we're conditioned to seeing in the movies. And they make sure we get a steady diet of that, car crashes especially, on the evening news. Don't we? It never changes. Or stories of murder.
What was the major event going on there?
Yeah. Well, the major event that was going on there was an attempt by George H.W. Bush and his son. So we're talking about Bush 41 and Bush 43, George W. Bush as well, involved in trying to remove 55 pallets of money, whether this was all in gold or in bills, these assets, and 55 pallets that were being picked up at the airport on the base had been hidden on the base for a number of years. For about 15 years. In fact, when they first invaded Iraq, the Chinese brought this money forward to kickstart a new economy in Iraq. And they funded the money, and that money was flown to Jordan. And it sat there in Jordan, and then they took it back to the States. They never dispersed it in Iraq. They robbed $100 trillion from the central bank of Iraq. Okay.
They had that much money there?
Oh, yeah. You can't believe the amounts of money that are floating around the planet. They stole that, and they put the majority of it in some 7,000 lockboxes and three large room-sized vaults in London. And the British police found that last year and took 300 of their officers and cordoned off these three storage facilities, which were being managed and run by South Africans, by the way, and they froze these assets. They started freezing the foreign banks. You see, we're getting into international financial corruption here. This is what this was about. And Fort Hood was where they were hiding this money that was used to kickstart the Iraqi economy. It was fronted by China. And you think it's a coincidence we have problems with China right now? It has everything to do with the fact that they've stolen trillions of dollars numerous times from China. I've reported about that, too. You're familiar with my original Wantagate story, but I've fine-tuned it to understand that most of this corruption has to do with the theft and the illegal privatization of real estate, or the hypothecation of the value of real estate holdings in derivatives and hedge funds. It's just an enormous amount of money. So all these foreign accounts are being frozen, so they had to get their hands on where they knew there was cash, and that was the cash stashed at Fort Hood. That's what that event was about. Now, what's interesting about the name of Major Nidal Malik Hassan is that there's a chain of investment companies run by the Middle Easterns. We'll say Palestinians, Lebanese, Syrians, Jordanians, maybe even Iraqis and Iranians. But this is part of the intelligence network. This isn't some private thing that's going on here. They know exactly what's going on, and they're using this to fund all of these so-called terrorist activities overseas. They own large real estate conglomerations throughout the country. And as I'm investigating and doing the genealogical research on these presidents or presidential candidates, I'm finding they're all involved in the money laundering. You can pretty much say that every politician in Washington is involved in the money laundering and the obfuscation of enormous sums of money.
But do you think that a lot of them are aware of that, or are they?
They're aware of it. Sure, okay. Aware of it. These people have no conscience. Okay, they're soulless, and they lie through their teeth while they're grinning at us. Their Cheshire cat grin. Well, the name Malik is the name of a number of these investment companies around the country. And it's a name that they gave this guy, and I knew it wasn't his real name, and I actually did the genealogy on his family, and I located his alleged family. And the story they tell about his parents is totally fictional. And I found his pictures just on the accounts of who the family was. And I put four pictures. Now, some people in the intelligence community say that a couple of these pictures may not be him, but nonetheless, the trail I was following led to these four pictures.
Are you saying it's kind of like the case of like Bin Laden is related to a very wealthy family that it was happened to be a big huge construction? Larger than construction because they are, but that they're tied in with these instances where they take like a black sheep of the family, kind of like the Hinckley thing, and kind of isolate them and. There's ties like that?
No, Laden just played a role. He was a Bush partner, a Bush business partner, and the family was partners with the Bushes. The family was flown out of the United States after 9/11, that same day.
But wasn't he some kind of an asset for the intelligence?
CIA. He worked, with the CIA. We know that going back to 1986. And now I've had Ted Gunderson, former station chief. He was a supervisory special agent of the Los Angeles district of the FBI. And in 1986, he and Ralph Oberg and Michael Reconosciuto of Promise Software fame all met at the Hilton Hotel in Sherman Oaks, California. Bin Laden was taken to some munitions depots, if you want to call them that, to go grocery shopping for what weapons he wanted to take into Afghanistan to help the freedom fighters who were fighting against the Soviets at that time. And you see, all of this is jockeying for supremacy over the area. So he was a minion. He was doing the CIA's dirty work.
Well, wasn't Hinckley like a son of a good friend of the Bushes?
The Hinckleys, John Hinckley Sr. was a Bush partner.
Right.
Again, okay. It's not, you don't have to go very far. You know, the apple doesn't fall very far from the trunk. they're all related in some way.
Right.
And no one ever seems to want to bring this out. Certain people have, I'm not saying I'm the only one, but these connections, mm-hmm. What about the $150 billion loss at Silverado Savings? And they're going after Sean David Morton for $6 million. What about the $150 billion that they stole from the Silverado savings in Denver? And that was the president's son. Come on. You know, tell me that we're not dealing with organized crime here. That's all this is. Masquerading as government.
Okay, so how did you end up going? So you're just saying, you just started asking questions about the Hassan person. Then how did you get in? I mean, if I'm correct, you're about the only person I've run across that got this slant on this Fort Hood incident, or are you?
Well, on the money side, Chris Story, who is the publisher, editor of the International Currency Review and various other publications, knew about the Malik connection. A lot of it on my end is intuition. Really, it's intuition. And anyone who knows me, and there are a lot of people, will tell you that I'm off the charts with my intuition. The difficult part is finding the pieces of the puzzle so I can put it together and you can look at it. You see?
Mm-hmm.
I see this. I see it all in my mind, okay? And I know when they're telling the story and it's not making any sense, or when I get the feeling, wait a minute, this is too smooth. This is, you know, they have all of this information, who the guy is doing the shooting and why he's doing this. And he wasn't targeted to go to be shipped off to Afghanistan. That was a cover story. He was on the transfer committee, which is sort of an intelligence committee, from the Bush regime to the long-legged Mac Daddy regime. I don't like using his name because it's a little bit confusing which one of three I should use, or thousands. Attached to bogus real estate documents. I prefer to call him Barry Rockefeller, actually. So, what I'm saying here is this guy is listed. He's in a brochure sitting on the panel with these people. He was involved in intelligence stuff, but we're talking about mind-controlled intelligence, MK Ultra. The nastiest stuff that there is.
They're finding out that there's a lot of similarities in these events, too, and they love to use the lone gunman thing, even though quite often there's been pretty good proof to show that, you know, there wasn't a lone gunman really involved, that there was probably more involved.
There were three shooting events going on simultaneously on the base, including rapid-fire machine guns.
So
they heard this where in the auditorium where there was a graduation ceremony going on. They heard the machine guns. And the chaplain who was presiding over this event heard it himself and said he's been in war zones. He knows what machine guns sound like. Now, that's not the description you got in the processing center there where the people were in there to get their medical clearance. And that's where Hassan is alleged to have murdered these people. Certainly they can shoot him, and because they shot him doesn't mean that he was doing the shooting either. There were three places. The other place was in a barracks. Now, one story has it that Hassan was actually in the barracks with two guys that he was counseling who were in opposition to going to Afghanistan. And that they were involved in a firefight. So we have, and we got this from somebody who's there, okay? I say we because I was on Drew Rain's, a Marines disquisition show when this was all going down. Literally, it was, the news came out while we were on the air. And I instantly said, this is a false flag event and I'm going to prove it. And I did.
Well, it certainly had, you know, some major questions. It seems like the more we try to make things secure, it seems like the places that seem to have a lot of these events are these areas that you would think would be the most secure. And it makes you wonder, what are we kind of misspending money?
Well, money is a word, but you need to ask the question, or just make the statement, follow the money. You know, who profits?
And so do you think this Port Hood thing has any tie-in to the Wanta situation?
In a way it does. Wanta is one element that kickstarted the whole thing of amassing these trillions of funds while they were basically crashing the Soviet Union to be split up so that they could now create more wars, you see, which is exactly what they're doing. Gave us the pretext to go in to Afghanistan and take over the poppy fields, build a pipeline from Kazakhstan through Afghanistan. I don't know that they're even using that pipeline right now. But see, they say, well, who are these Taliban or who's the Al-Qaeda? This was all created by the intelligence agencies.
Yeah. So you got, I mean, because you've got quite a number of articles on your website, and that's Direct Light Productions, is that?
DirectLightProductions.com.
.com. Yeah. And you do a radio program on BBS Radio, is that
mm-hmm.
correct?
And Evident Footprints.
Evident Footprints. And so you cover a lot of this, and then you're also a guest on a lot of different radio programs also. But what it seems like, what I recall when I first got introduced to you, I can't remember whether it was through the Wanta story or it was the one about George Scherf, where you were following the genealogy of the Bush family.
Yeah, and I didn't follow the genealogy that they published, because that's part of the lie. I traced the family to Germany, and I even came up with documentation that they were from Dürlich, which is just south of Leipzig. And there's another fellow by the name of, his pen name is Eric O'Ryan. Eric Berman is his name. He was dating Otto Skorzeny's daughter. Skorzeny was a commando type assassin, Hitler bodyguard, insider in the Nazi party. He did all the impossible rescue missions that they needed or infiltrations, and he was deeply embedded in what was going on here during the war. During World War II, he was actually in the presence of the Philadelphia experiment, where they were trying to use Tesla technology to cloak a ship and move it to another place.
He was involved in it, or somehow?
Yes, he and Reinhard Galen were involved in it. And on my Scherf article, I have pictures of all of them when they were young men sitting in the Scherf house.
Mm-hmm.
George H. Scherf is sitting there wearing a German Navy uniform. His father, George H. Scherf Sr., who is Prescott Bush when he came to the United States, married into the Walker family, was involved with Union Banking Corporation and all the other Nazi-based central banks, which were really Zionist banks, that funded the war. They were into money laundering and really paying Hitler's bills.
And so you pretty much tried to follow the genealogy through their papers they came into this country on? Is that how you got...
No, they came into the country on false papers. I sort of had to backtrack because Scherf, George H. Scherf Sr., was known as the assistant, the accountant,
Oh, right. Okay, with the Tesla.
Of Nikola Tesla,
right.
Okay? And they were stealing all of Tesla's technology and selling it to other countries overseas, or the government was just taking it outright and developing it. And Tesla was just always doing his work. The man died penniless and was murdered by Galen and Skorzeny. Skorzeny admitted that.
But he wasn't a youngster when that happened. I mean, Tesla, I thought he was in his 70s or something.
No, he wasn't that old at all at
oh,
that
really?
Time. No, he was in his late 30s, early 40s at that time. 1943, January 6th of 1943 was the date that occurred.
Okay, I was thinking he was in his... Never mind. But so
now those two same men were at the Philadelphia experiment, and when all the chaos hit, when the experiment was over, and they found pieces of bodies and people, some people stuck in the ship, and just all kinds of really crazy stuff. Something like you would see in a science fiction movie actually occurred. They snuck on board the ship and they stole. There were three devices that were used to generate the frequencies for them to be able to pull off this a scientific event that really bordered on very advanced metaphysics. What they did was stole two of the utrons, and they ended up taking those to Hitler. Now, the Nazis developed flying saucers. I've got pictures of them on my website. So, you know, I didn't make these pictures up. They were taken in Germany. One guy said, well, no, those are from a movie. I said, name the movie. Which you can't do. I mean, you can see they're Nazis. They've got swastikas on them. They've got cannons. Now, these were not inner space vehicles, but they were vehicles that could move around, and they had the technology. They had the utrons, two of them. So they could use those. They could back engineer them, which I'm sure they did. And that's another aspect of what ties all this stuff together anyway.
So the Nazis had a kind of anti-gravity flying principle?
Oh, yeah. Anti-gravity and likely at least a kickstart into antimatter. They really needed the antimatter devices to be able to move through space at these incredible speeds. But certainly anti-gravity and cloaking. And the Tesla coils played a big role in that, too. Tesla was an absolute genius beyond description.
Okay, now that kind of led into what you did some background work with on President Obama and Barack Obama.
Yeah, actually, if you want, I'll explain how that all came about. The 2008 election campaign was underway, and I had done this genealogy piece, and I'd done the Wantagate piece, and I decided I was going to look at the genealogy of who I thought were going to be three names at the back end of that whole campaign. There were going to be three presidential candidates who were going to be playing some role, either in the general election or something to do after the election. And I was right about all three. I had already done the genealogy on John McCain. And I got a call from my publisher, editor, Don Harkins, the late Don Harkins, I must add. He was murdered by these people for putting out the truth. And high technology was used to accomplish that. But Don had called me and asked me if I wouldn't consider doing a piece on some of the candidates. And he said, you're so good with this genealogy, I'd really like you to do genealogy pieces because, you know, you've been alluding to the fact that you don't think most or maybe even all of these people are not Americans. And certainly you were right about Bush, and I'm willing to entertain this if you can come up with some solid evidence. And I said, I've already got the evidence on McCain. McCain was not an American. He wasn't born here. Everything they said is a fiction. It was created with the intention of just hoodwinking the whole public. He was sent here by Edward VII. Now, at the time, Edward VII, as the progenitor of the McCain clan, he was Prince Albert Edward. And if you know anything about the princes, they rule over Scotland and Wales, and he was a philanderer. He had many outside girlfriends, and he got one of them pregnant for sure. several times. And I had deduced that that was Jenny Jerome, who eventually became Lady Randolph Churchill. And she was known to be a philanderer as well. This ties into my Circus Chautauqua research, by the way, because Randolph Churchill was part of that. He's in the card file of people that participated in Circuit Chautauqua. So was John Foster Dulles, which was kind of interesting because this was a German, I see it as a Nazi social engineering program that went on tour like a circus around the country and started in the 1800s, late 1800s, and went up until the early 1930s. Traveling around the country, teaching people certain values, playing oompa music and orators, many who became politicians. And so it was a social conditioning program. Meantime, they're importing thousands and thousands of people from Europe, or basically sneaking into the country. They were being bribed at the INS. To let these people in, and many of the key people that I identified in all my research were snuck in at Ellis Island. And at the time this began, Teddy Roosevelt was the police commissioner of New York, which would facilitate it. As his reward for sneaking everybody into the country, they made him president. And they did that with another guy that we're going to talk about, I think, in the second hour here. I don't know if you take a break on the hour or anything, but
no, I just do an ID, station ID, and then we go on with it. Go on with it. So
nice to recall that. it's been a couple of years. It seems like
It's been a while.
It seems like I'm going all over the place, and in a way I am, but this is all connected. You know, I'm sort of explaining what they did and how they did it, and there's a history behind this. It had a starting point, and they haven't stopped. Once they got it rolling, they just kept it going.
Well, I'll go ahead and I'll just do the station ID, even though it's a couple of minutes early, but we get a little leeway there. And so, again, you're listening to KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado, and you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN LPFM. On KHEN, community-supported radio, and we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And if you would like to listen to tonight's program or past programs at Truth Quest, we're available at www.gimmesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And my sidekick here tonight is William Wallace. And our special guest is Don Nikoloff, who we've had a couple times prior, but he keeps coming up with more and more interesting info in his research. And so we thought he'd have him back. And actually, what we're going to get into here in this second hour is something that I kind of helped spur on.
Boy, did you. And, you know, if you weren't a pretty lady, I don't think I would have helped you out on this one.
I'm going to make a comment here.
Sure.
I find it quite synchronistic that a little 15-minute segment I'm coming with later seems to follow very much in suit with this about fraud, world fraud and the money system, which you had introduced when you said first coming out that there is fraud going on all over the world, and you're identifying the characters in the play.
Well, I hope I am.
Yeah.
For your benefit, I mean.
Okay, and let me say one other thing. The views expressed on this program are those of myself and are my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And Don Nikoloff has his own radio program Monday through Friday on BBS Radio, which would come directly after he's done with doing our program tonight. And then he's also writes for the Idaho Observer and has his own website, directlightproductions.com, correct? Okay, and his radio program's Evident Footprints. And why don't we go ahead and, you know, kind of transition into what we wanted to get into tonight.
Okay, and maybe we can change that disclaimer, and the board and the station will agree with us. Nothing wrong in saying that, right?
Right.
Not necessarily, but there's a strong hunch I have that they may they may agree. All right, what am I talking about? Well, Melody happened to send me an article that she had come about through an inheritance, we'll say, the passing on of private possessions of someone who left this reality. And they actually, this person actually did this country quite a service, as I see it, because it's exposing another dimension of false, corrupt history about who our leaders are and what, how they attain power. And here we are in 2010, and for the past several years, I and hundreds, if not thousands, of other writers and researchers have been complaining about the long-legged Mac Daddy currently in the White House, who doesn't have the gumption to prove who he is because he can't. We don't have a certificate of live birth, which is a constitutional requirement to run for the presidency, along with the fact that he has to be born on American soil. He has to be a natural-born citizen, not a naturalized citizen. And that's not the case. Why else wouldn't he show any documentation? And you have to ask yourself, why would so many others be willing to commit treason to hide this? So the article that Melody sent me was rather significant because it mirrors, or I should say, the long-legged Mac Daddy's entrance into the throne of the White House is mirrored by a predecessor, the 34th president of the United States, Dwight David Eisenhower. Now, the article that Melody sent me was entitled "Ike Gets Birth Certificate Filed in Courthouse Here," and we determined that it was written by one of two Denison, Texas newspapers that are now one Denison, Texas newspaper, so it really doesn't matter what name we give it. Fact is that this article had been put away in a scrapbook by the very person that issued the birth certificate in the Grayson County court and had given it to the county clerk to be forwarded as evidence that Dwight Eisenhower was born in Denison, Texas. When I read this article, Melody, I smelled a rat. And I spent 12 hours researching. By the time the day was over, I had gotten this early in the morning, first thing I saw in my email box, in fact, and I saw that you had sent it to a couple of other people, and I said, I got to get on this right away, or somebody's going to come out with a story. Little did I know that I was the only one actually researching it, and I think you had a sneaking suspicion that if there was something there, you knew I would find it.
I thought it would tie right in just because of the fact that the background you did on Bush and Obama. So I thought there, you know, but
and McCain, McCain at that point.
Right. But at that point in time, I thought it was my angle at that point in time was saying, well, they went to the trouble to at least prove this president's birth.
Yes. And well, as I was alluding to before we went to the break, Don Harkins had asked me to write the story and, on these candidates, and I picked McCain and Obama and then Hillary Clinton. So I was in the midst of tying up my Hillary Clinton piece when you sent me this article, and I dropped that's the Three Stooges Go to Washington series. I stopped that article and I immediately sunk my teeth into this one and, looked at it and read it numerous times. I don't know. I read it 10 or 20 times, and every time I read it, something else jumped out at me. And then I realized there's something about this story that doesn't ring totally true. I had to find out who Lonnie Roberts, the guy who was spearheading this pursuit of a birth certificate on behalf of the man that was just returning from his appointment as Supreme Allied Commander of NATO forces in Europe, and had been the Supreme Commander of the forces during World War II. It didn't make sense. It didn't make sense. Why should someone have to get a birth certificate for him? And he's running for the presidency. Why would some grunt do this? And mail the letter to his wife and ask her to go around getting signatures from people that witnessed the birth in Denison, Texas? Well, I went to my trusty source of information, the shipping records at Ellis Island. And I found that Dwight Eisenhower, Lieutenant Dwight David Eisenhower, he was going by at the time, even though they claim he was born as David Dwight Eisenhower, was born in Tyler, Texas. And he stated that on September 27th, 1924. Now here we are, the election of 1952, and they're saying Denison, Texas? Wait a minute. I looked at the map. The two cities are 130 miles apart. At least 2 hours by Route 69 in those days. Today, taking the interstates through the Dallas-Fort Worth area from Denison, southwest, and then southeast over to Tyler, it's 164 miles. How could anybody be so far off about where they were born? So I knew, I had right there, I had my answer. It's a lie. He wasn't born in Tyler, and he wasn't born in Denison. So I set about looking to find out where he was born. And all the evidence was basically just leading to nowhere until I saw a picture of him. I began looking for photographs. And I saw a picture of him wearing an Austrian army uniform from World War I. And I said, why is this American soldier wearing an Austrian army uniform? And why is he, as I made measurements and analyzed his photograph, why does he appear to be 8'3" tall? And why does his wife appear to be 7'3" tall? And where is this place where this picture was taken? It's on their wedding day. And then I found out that they were married in Denver, and I couldn't figure out where the staircase they were standing in front of was in Denver. And then I followed the story that he was supposedly assigned duty at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas, and that this was the stairway in front of the St. Louis Hall at St. Louis College, which later became St. Mary's College. And it just didn't make any sense. And it's July 1st, and Mamie's dressed up with a scarf and a sort of like a furred coat and very heavily dressed. And he's wearing this wool suit. And they're in San Antonio, Texas on July 1st. I would say it'd get pretty hot, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I've been there.
So the facts weren't adding up. In fact, this was a Photoshop job like Obama's pictures. All right? They're compilations, okay? They were not there. They were not there. They were put in front of a stairway in electronically. And, in fact, if you go to their Wikipedia picture, the same picture, and I have this in my article. It comes later on. Because the first article I wrote was basically following the birth certificate and Lonnie Roberts and basically saying, this is an inexcusable scandal here. We have somebody that had to lie about where they were born. I knew this guy wasn't an American, and I made the connection when I found the Austrian Army uniform. I needed to be looking in Austria. And if he's from Austria, who would he be related to? He would have to be related to a very, very powerful political figure. and the political figure who was in power there in that part of the world for 68 years was Franz Joseph I. So I knew if I looked, I would find the lineage to the family there in Austria-Hungary, and I did. I did.
So, I mean, one of the interesting parts about this is when you were discussing this article on, with Drew Raines, I caught part of that, and they were questioning the fact of, or he was questioning the fact of, you know, its authenticity of the article, because it didn't state the name of the paper on there. It's just that I knew the people that knew about the event that and where that came from and it's in its provenance.
Mm-hmm.
And then something even more interesting happened. But it happened after I was, about a month or two after you'd written that article. I'm looking at that article, I'm going, man, do I know that name? Where do I know that name from? Well, we had a friend who'd found in a file cabinet sitting in the street after a fire that had, you know, it had been put there because they were going to haul it off to the trash, and they were bulldozing the lot where the fire had been.
Yeah, the house was gutted, basically.
Right. Yeah. And he looked through the papers, and, you know, some of them were water-soaked in the sort, but he pulled out the papers that were in this file cabinet. And this file cabinet, I mean, he realized that a lot of these papers had dignitaries' names on it, anywhere from Lyndon Johnson to President Eisenhower and Forrestal and various other dignitaries, and so he decided he'd send it up to my husband to maybe sell these autographs on eBay. And so when we got them, you know, we tried to do that.
And I said, please don't sell them.
Well, no, this was before you were in the picture. And so one of the things we found out and why we didn't have a lot of them sold is we found out a lot of these political figures would use stamps. And so having stamped letters didn't make them very valuable. And so, but there was about, I don't know how many. I know what was left was around 37 of these letters with this guy's name. But when I called up my son, I says, what is the name on those letters? Because he was the one helping my husband down the road because I was off doing other things. And so he got involved, and he had those, and he brought them right over, and there was this guy's name on these letters. So and the very letter of Lonnie Roberts asking Mamie Eisenhower for the information so he could put this birth certificate information together to get one for Eisenhower was in it. And I'm talking
the very letter written about in the article.
Now, you want to talk about coincidence and timing. It was just totally bizarre. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, somebody placed it there in your hands from somewhere else because it was just too weird.
The Lord works in mysterious ways, does he not?
Yes. So I'll let you go ahead and go on with what those letters meant and that
well,
sort.
Well, if I can put another feather in my cap, I had determined that there were two Lonnie F. Roberts in Texas. And one was alleged to have been a private in the Army, and the other one was alleged to have been in the Navy. But I was beginning to not believe either one of those stories, that they were just stories, because I couldn't find any official documentation. Now, tracing military records is difficult because they had, a fire in St. Louis, and it destroyed a big proportion of the military records. But there were people out there who have been, ever since then, restoring records on their own. And if one is diligent and persevering, you can find information. And I still couldn't corroborate anything other than that it was a story. You see, I was in the fiction section of, I was in the non-fiction section of the bookstore. Someone had put a fiction book in there. Okay? And I found that book.
Well, these letters also ranged, or what was left, it ranged from 1942 to what, 1972? Were this...
30 years,
yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I don't want to spill the beans about the whole piece that's coming out.
Because I'll let you take it from there then.
but we can say that the letter to Mamie makes some false statements. It makes the statement that Lonnie Roberts was born in Denison, Texas, and lived in the house with, he says, I was born there and my parents lived in the house. It's a cryptic way of saying he's related to Eisenhower. Really.
Hmm.
In fact, they have the same parents, but the lie is a lie. It's a lie. And you can't prove a lie to be true. You can only prove that it's a lie. Okay? What they did is they created a totally fictitious document that was intended to back up just a whole series of lies.
Well, another interesting, I mean, although a lot of people back in that time period may not have had a birth certificate or anything, but this, it just so happens that the county seat in this county, it also, courthouse, it also burnt down in the 30s. So if you were going to create a document, that would be a good place to start.
Well, Mr. Eisenhower should have known that he was born in Tyler, Texas. He knew it back in 1924. Did he forget that by 1952? Did he have Alzheimer's in 1952? I have to ask that question, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Alzheimer's was around in 1952, so he didn't have Alzheimer's. So he lied. They were two lies, actually. And I, in my next article, I'm proving that all this was nothing but a bunch of bunk all the way across the board. Who Lonnie Roberts was, what his mission was, what he did, is fascinating. But we're jumping way ahead of the game here because there's lots of tidbits in my Teenage Mutant Ninja Eisenhower articles.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and I think it'd probably be appropriate for us to move on to that. That's
okay.
The 18-day investigation I did. Now, this first article came out of 12 hours of research. I timed it.
Uh-huh.
And I was amazed at how quickly I came up with this information. And I alluded to the fact that these two Lonnie Roberts both played a role. And I'll say this for the listeners, that they were one and the same person. They created two individuals born 11 years apart and dying 11 years apart. But they were spooks. They were not the only identities of this person. In fact, Lonnie, as can be testified by the other letters that you referred to a few minutes ago, played many roles. He was many people. Fictitious addresses and what have you. Okay, so that said, I got into the actual genealogy of Eisenhower. Now I studied what they wrote in the history books. I studied what was in the Presidential Museum, and I found red flags everywhere. Not false flags, just red flags. Ida Stover, for example. Ida Stover was alleged to be his mother, who was from Virginia. And I found inconsistencies in the story and in the census records. Okay? I didn't create the stories and I didn't create the census records. People did. And for some reason, everybody lied. Everybody. They lied in the stories and they lied in the census records. Because Ida Stover was a fictitious person. She didn't even exist. She only existed for the convenience of selling this story to the American public. If Ida Stover didn't exist, and we're just going to use transitive property, then David Jacob Eisenhower, the alleged father of Dwight David Eisenhower, didn't exist. And the story by the East Texas Historical Society and a couple of other writers, one an alleged school teacher from Houston, Texas, who goes by Miss Adams, were lies as well, because Eisenhower was not born in Denison, Texas. He did not leave Denison, Texas at 6 months. Neither did he leave Denison at 1.5 years or at 2 years old. His father did not work for the railroad because his father did not exist. His father did not exist because Ida Stover did not exist. Okay? Are you getting the picture?
But he had a father.
He had a father, yes. But his father was in Europe. His father was an emperor. Okay? Now, remember what I said. He wasn't born in Tyler, and he mm-hmm. wasn't right. where he first said he was born in 1924. Okay? He wasn't born in Denison because he was born in Tyler. Can't be born in two places at once. Can't be born in two places or one place when the mother didn't exist. The father didn't exist either. It was a made-up name. And they weren't in Abilene, Kansas either. So happens that a lot of Zionist Nazi types lived in Kansas, or at least used the ruse that they lived in Kansas. They actually lived in Oklahoma. The Nazis, I'm saying. Operation Paperclip was part of that. And certainly Operation Paperclip was facilitated by the Nazis that came into this country and bought up properties in Texas and Oklahoma and Kansas and were working for the Rockefeller oil companies. For many, many years, this had been going on. My prior research proves this. And we can say the same thing about the McCann lineage, a.k.a. McCain. We can say this about the alleged maternal grandparents and parents of Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Satoro, Barry Rockefeller. We can say the same thing about that lineage, the Dunhams, because I proved that they were communist spies. You wonder why we're moving towards communism? Because he was indoctrinated into communism. And it's very much like fascism, okay? The Nazis were fascists. It's all linked together. These are political ideologies that are put in front of us, but all run by organized crime. Remember, follow the money. It's all organized crime. It's all it is. It's not legitimate government. It's organized crime. So, tracing the genealogy of the American Eisenhowers, I found a Carl Eisenhower entering the country at one point, and next to him on the passenger manifest was a lady by the name of Pauline Heck. That was an alias. She was allegedly bringing 6 children into the country. There were 6 Eisenhowers, by the way, that they brought in. The Eisenhower story also says there were 6 children. The photographs, which are compilations, also show 6 children, meaning these were put together by intelligence agencies, okay? Those families didn't exist as they were portrayed in photographs. They did not exist as they were portrayed in historical and biographical accounts. But what did exist is the spy network, and Carl Eisenhower came to the United States with Pauline Heck, who was going to Fostoria, Ohio, to meet her husband. Pauline Heck was actually the alleged wife of Wilhelm Heck, who was Carl Eisenhower. Carl Eisenhower was a double agent, and he was a member of the Nazi Party. He joined the Nazi Party in 1924, actually. He got his gold badge. in Offenbach. And he claimed that he was from Offenbach, and Pauline Heck claimed she was from Offensen. It's interesting. Changed the name just a little bit, you see. She went to see Wilhelm at the Fostoria Glass Company. Problem was, that company moved in 1896 to West Virginia. 12 years later, she was 12 years late in, to visit her husband in Ohio. Okay? I caught her in a lie. And when I traced Wilhelm Heck, I found out he was a U-boat captain and registered as such through a code that I cracked on the Ellis Island documents.
So what do they stand to gain by creating these things? And why would they be bringing in these people and setting them up? I mean,
it's an infiltration. They're infiltrating the government to take over this country. Don't you see that happening today?
Oh, definitely. But these had to be long thought out plans.
The Bushes did this, the Sherfs, I should say, right? They did this. Okay. The McCanns did this. You know, the Obama is not even a name. It's not even a family name. It's just a made up word.
Well, now Clinton was supposedly a son of one of these prominent families. Correct?
Winthrop Rockefeller is alleged to be his father. Okay, so you have a series of Rockefellers.
Even Churchill has a background there that in a Rothschild or a Rockefeller or Rothschild, is that correct?
Well, Jenny Jerome comes from a Zionist family, a Jewish family, they say from New York. But I'm not buying that story either. And she was, again, as far as I'm concerned, she was McCain's mother, or McCann, John McCann III, we'll say. Actually, the McCanns were John Sidney McCann, Sr., Albert McCann, and then John, should have been John Sidney McCann II. Okay, they snuck both of them. What's interesting is they snuck McCann into the United States through the Panama Canal Zone. The ship that Eisenhower was on when he arrived in 1924 came from the Panama Canal Zone. Interesting, huh?
Hmm.
Teddy Roosevelt ran the United States lines, and that was the shipping company that the McCanns were working on. Both John and Albert. And the story about the Mexican marriage and all of this stuff and them being from Mississippi, more bunk. Or should we say horse pucky? And I know we're on the radio here, so mind my P's and Q's.
This is like trying to track a bunch of snakes marching through the desert. You can't tell which track is to what. Everything leads nowhere, like following sidewinders.
It's like tracking snakes through the tundra and into Alaska to the North Pole. So here we have, I'm sort of all over the place, but the story about Eisenhower being raised and going to school in Abilene, Kansas, that's a hoax. I did research on the school there, and it's very interesting. Even that story is quite interesting. I encourage people to read the article, really, because we just can't cover all this in this interview. But then West Point. If he didn't go to school in Kansas, then he didn't go to West Point. He was in World War II during the time he allegedly went to, near the graduation point. He wasn't on the football team. The man they claim is him in the photo of the football team is not Dwight David Eisenhower. And neither is it him in the graduation picture or of the high school, nor as a cadet at West Point. Total fiction. And then we have marriage photos. Now, what's interesting is we know Mamie's a liar. She claims that she lived in the Dowd, that's her family name, her maiden name, the Dowd family home at 750 Lafayette Street in Denver, Colorado. And she claimed that their son, who was 2 years old at the time they arrived at Ellis Island, was born there. Well, that's his first time into the country. How could he have been born there? Number one. Number two, the day they say they got married, July 1st, 1916, they took a wedding photo at St. Louis College in San Antonio. How did they hop, skip, and jump to San Antonio the same day when they got married in Denver and went on a, what, two-week honeymoon to a resort in Colorado, then a trip to visit their his brother and their parents at the college? Come on. Who would ruin their honeymoon to do such a thing? Okay? More horse pucky. Now, they allege she was the football coach at St. Louis College, which was why they took the picture there. It was supposed to add credibility to that dimension of the story. They're supposedly married there. Further research into the genealogy of the Eisenhowers and finding them through the Carl Eisenhower photo that I found is a European photo taken in Solka Bukovina, Austria-Hungary. That was a wedding of Elizabeth Eisenhower. Sitting next to her is Carl Eisenhower. And at the other end of the front row of seats was Barbara Zarowski. That is the mother of Dwight David Eisenhower. And the father is Franz Joseph I. Zarowski is not wearing a wedding ring, and neither is Carl Eisenhower. So they couldn't have been married. They were posing as surrogate parents. Possibly even Elizabeth fathered some children for Franz Joseph I. But this is how they do it. This is what Edward VII did in creating the McCann lineage. The Rockefellers did this with Barack Obama. I maintain they did this in Indonesia, not in Hawaii, and not in Kenya. And no, it wasn't an African father and a white woman from Kansas. Again, we have Kansas in the story, you see. They're selling us the Wizard of Oz three times. We've got the version with Judy Garland. We got the version with the Dunhams. And we have the version with the Eisenhowers. It's right in front of our face, okay? And the Wicked Witch of the West is here. Let me tell you. And her sister was the Wicked Witch of the East, if you remember. Okay? So, Eisenhower was from Solka Bukovina, Austria-Hungary. Now, what would Mamie Eisenhower's real name be? So happens that in the Eisenhower lineage, I found the path, and I determined his real name is Adolf Eisenhower. Isn't that interesting? We have two Adolfs from World War II. Adolf Eisenhower, Adolf Hitler. Adolf Eisenhower married a woman named Ida Koch. K-O-C-H. I'm giving you the German pronunciation. Ida Koch. Koch in German means cook. Ida Cook. What was Eisenhower's mother's name? Ida Stover? Isn't that interesting? We have an Ida. Came from Europe. Think that's a coincidence, or does it sound rather synchronistic?
Well, you really have to be able to start drawing some parallels, that's for sure.
Well, yes. Now, I found this school registry in the Franz Joseph Staatsgymnasium, which is the town school in Romania. And that's where Eisenhower was trained. And he fought in World War I. And he had some brothers, and I get into this in the next articles. The brothers were brought over with him. And Lonnie Roberts is going to make a whole lot of sense when I go into that. Okay?
Okay.
The photographs in the article show Austrian army uniforms. I identify that he was placed electronically into a photograph. In fact, this St. Louis College football team, which is photograph 3J of part one of Teenage Mutant Ninja Eisenhower's. That whole photograph is a fabrication. All the people sitting in it, everything. It was all manufactured with a computer. And they do things like this. They can bring these photos out whenever they create them and add them to the museum, publish them, because they have to sell us the story. Now, I've been accurate in all my other research, and I have to say, Melody, the letters that you referred to back up all this research. In a mystical way, there's a tie to all these people and all these events.
Hmm.
The photos of David Jacob Eisenhower, the alleged David Jacob Eisenhower, the father of Dwight, and Ida Stover, are actually photos of Johann Eisenhower, a brother of Karl, another offspring of the king, or the emperor, I should say, Franz Joseph I, and Barbara Zarowski as young people. And their photos are photoshopped, too. And I analyze that in the article, in part two. I analyze why it's photoshopped. They have lines drawn around their body. She's wearing a light-colored outfit, and she has black lines drawn around her body. He's wearing a dark-colored suit, and he's got white lines drawn around his body to get them to blend into the background. These are very poorly constructed spy photos, we could call them. The interesting thing is that there are a couple of genuine photographs, one of Barbara Zarowski as a young woman in the alleged Eisenhower family photo. And there are two versions of those. The black and white version I did not publish because I didn't want to violate a copyright. So I put the link in the article so people could go to the website, Corbis Images, so they could look at it. They pulled it off the web. But all you have to do is imagine the color photo I found, which is not copywritten, and it's doctored. It's a doctored photo. And imagine that it was just black and white. That's the same photo. So here we have photos now where I can see the younger versions of Barbara Zarowski and Johann Eisenhower, and they match pretty well. Closer than anything else I've seen put out there by the officials. Then they show the ships that the Eisenhowers and the Hex came on when they illegally entered the United States, the different time periods they came. What's interesting is when Pauline Heck came to the United States to meet her husband in Fosteria, Ohio, and he should have been in West Virginia, he was actually in France. And he arrives a month or 6 weeks later on a ship from France. It's fascinating. When you really do the legwork and you pour through thousands and thousands of documents, you find that one needle in the haystack. That's really what this research is like. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. But when I was done, I had a pile of needles, and it was real easy to connect the dots. The thread was there. If one would look carefully, you could see it all right there before you.
So ultimately, what it sounds like, the picture you're drawing, is that there's a number of, they don't want to leave anything to chance as far as lineages and families, so that when they have these political offices, they have some sort of control over these individuals that get in.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's obfuscation. You know, it's lying, it's deception, and they use whatever method they have to use. They create a story, okay? Let's use the bookstore example again. They create a story. You go into the bookstore, and you buy the book, and you think because you got it out of the nonfiction section that it's true. Okay, does it matter if it's a bunch of lies and in the nonfiction section or in the fiction section? It doesn't. They're still lies. It doesn't matter if it's not even in the bookstore.
Right. So,
when you think outside the box. That's the point.
When is your article supposed to come out?
Well, I've been trying to get it out over the past couple of weeks. What I'm doing is, editing down the text from the various samples, because it would just be too monstrous to put all 37 documents in there.
Right.
And there's a tremendous amount of research that goes along with it. But I'm hoping, I was hoping this past weekend I would have it done. And with certain internet problems we're all having, problems with our radio shows being interrupted. See, we're bringing the truth out, and they're panicking now to try to stop it from coming out. And it's going to keep coming out. There's no doubt about that. So it's supposed to be in this next edition of the Idaho Observer. We're trying to get it in last month's edition, and that didn't work out just because there were so many other news events that were developing at the time. That said, and I'm doing like three major investigations simultaneously, but my plan is to have it done, even though I should be finishing my Hillary article, you see, for the Three Stooges series.
Oh, so you're still working on some part of your other series that kind of ties into this one then, huh?
Yes. Now, if I was writing a book, none of this would be known until the book came out, but because it's important to get a lot of this information out in real time, your contribution has forced me in a different direction. and I've got lots of other things going on at the same time, you know. But I'm not making excuses, just letting you know that it's close to coming out. And the intention is to have it out in the next Observer. So you should probably see it out by this coming weekend.
Okay. Well, you're juggling a lot of balls at once here, too. I mean, between your radio program and your writing and guesting on other programs, and then you seem to be following other events as well. So it gets to be pretty interesting when you're trying to search for the truth.
Yeah, my listeners to my show kind of expect me to do that. The listeners to the shows that I visit are hopeful that I do that, and then they kind of take it for granted that I'm going to. And then my readership at my website is it also expands to a lot of other sites, because there are, when I started out, nobody knew who I was, and I'm on a good million or more sites now.
Wow.
These articles and what have you. Many of my interviews, and I go into a lot of different areas. I mean, we could talk about space. Eisenhower was involved with the space program and the alien presence on this planet. there's no doubt about that, okay? It's in government documents. I mean, those have been published for a long time. Harry Truman, his predecessor, was too.
Well, it looks like you're going to have more presidents to look at, aren't too, while you get at it.
I think we may stop having presidents just till we clean house, No pun intended. it's really tedious work. Most people wouldn't. I mean, you can imagine. You've read the articles. You can see the amount of research that's there.
Right.
And I know you're wondering, how the heck did you find that? Where did you start? How did you know where to begin looking? And that's really the first thing I have to do. remember I alluded to intuition. You know, the sensing, knowing deep down inside that something is not right or something is not as it's been presented to us. And if you trust that intuition, and really you can't count on anyone else really to explain what that is. Only you know what your intuition is. It so happens that intuition works the same for every person. It's only when you're willing to share that with others that they begin to see it in themselves. I'll give you a quick example if I can. I know we're coming close to the end of the show here, but criminologist Dr. Greg Evenson had a show on RBN for a good year, a year and a half, and he's going around the country helping people right now just be prepared for some of the things that might be coming down the road. And if they don't happen, that's great. They're prepared. You know, what's the big deal? But he's studied my research, and he's also a scholar on the affairs of the Nazis and the secret societies and all that. He's a historian, and he teaches criminology. He teaches forensic sciences, and he tells me that that intelligence agencies around the world would love to have someone with my abilities to ferret out the truth. But I've come to see that that's not their interest. Their interest is not finding out the truth.
Covering it up.
No, it's covering it up, yeah. It's covering up the criminality that's going on. See, we're dealing with organized crime here. And these people are portrayed to be heroes. You know, they made Scherf a hero. They made McCann a hero. How heroic. And we got a guy in there now that can't even get a driver's license on the basis of information that's not been provided. That's no hero. Where is their glory in calling this man a black American or an African American? You know, he's not black and he's not an African American. He's not an American either. He's none of those things.
And he's not the president either.
And he's not the president. Very good, William. I second that emotion. And this is not any kind of theory. This is fact based on dogged research. I researched Obama for a year and a half. And none of what I've written has been refuted. Can't be, because I'm telling the truth. I've uncovered the truth, you see. Why would they fake Michael Rockefeller's death? Why do you suppose they would fake his death? They did. They faked it in photography. They faked the accounts. They faked it in videography. They created stories. They just came out with a movie about a bogus search for him. Even the search that they claimed that they made for him was phony.
Well, it's kind of like they're creating history. And when I used to sit back and watch a lot of the C-SPAN and the book channel that they had on there, one of the things that I kind of found, I think in one of the elections alone, I think they said they had over 1,000 books written just for that one election. And then I kept watching how these guys were coming out with new biographies on Lincoln. And I was wondering, what's the fascination with these biographies on Lincoln coming out at the same time? And I'm starting to question, are they changing history here? Is there something here that's going on that, you know, that they're trying to massage the truth or totally change it?
Well, they're trying to cover their tracks because of people like me and Ken Adachi and I'll say Greg Evenson, Dr. A. True Ott, Dr. Michael Castle. He's my guest tonight, by the way. Fascinating man.
Yeah, we'll have to catch that one because
these people have figured out what's going on. We've all together helping each other and communicating and networking with each other, just like you did with me. We're figuring out the truth, and they have to cover it up. They have to re-engineer the plan because the old story's not working now. People are waking up. see?
Mm-hmm.
If you're saying on your network you're putting out the truth, you better be putting it out. Or if you're saying it on your show or in your writing, you better be putting it out. And you have to have the courage to say that you're putting it out. I welcome the challenges of anyone trying to refute this information because it opens the door for me to prove it. But I've already done that. Okay?
Well, I guess we probably better bring this to an end so that you can prepare for your program coming up next. And then we'll. And I, again, really want to thank you for all the work that you're doing here. And it'll be real interesting to see how this comes together in your article.
Well, I should thank you, Melody, although maybe part of me wants to curse you, too, because... No, I'm just kidding. Your intuition, your perception, and your realization that you found something important, and you know you flatter me by having sent that to me and trusting that I might be able to make some mileage out of that. I did. It's led us to some very unusual truth that we didn't expect to find. And I certainly would like to come back, and we can talk about Lincoln and some of these other guys, too.
Okay.
Because like they fit the same mold. Go ahead, William.
I'd like to make my last comment by underscoring the importance of intuition. It's something that every one of us should seek out, practice, and develop within us to be led with our lives as to wherever we're to go. Intuition is... that divine voice speaking within us, I would say, and I'm glad to hear you use it.
Well, you know, the word comes from two words, in or en. In Greek, it means in. And tuition is to teach or teaching. Inner teaching is what it is. We have it inside of us already. All we have to do is look for it.
Just be open to it.
Yes, and we could use another word. Enthusiasm comes from two Greek words, en, which means in, and theos, which means God. When you're enthusiastic, you're in God. So both words really are powerful when you're looking for the truth.
Thank you. I like that.
Well, and I want to thank you, Don. And, yes, we need to do this again soon so that we can get the follow-up, Don, all the fallout that comes out over this.
Well, you just let me know and make sure you write it down in your date book.
I had it written down, but I wrote it down on a different date. But you know what? The universe rearranged itself, and it didn't matter.
Okay. I'm a stickler for detail, so just remember that.
Well, and it worked out great. So again,
I want to thank you for having me on and allowing me the opportunity to share the truth with your listeners.
And your radio program, again, is Evident Footprints on BBS Radio.
I like to call it a show, if I may. And
okay,
that's because I'm showing things. I'm not programming.
Well, that's a good idea.
Okay. So
I might change my wording at this point from now on.
It's just a little pet peeve I have about that. I call it a show.
Well, again, go ahead and carry on, and I want to again thank you.
And I have to have you on my show. Maybe we can work something out next month.
Okay, that'd be great.
And maybe you can bring William along.
Oh, he'd love that.
Okay. Say hi to Katie for me, by the way.
I will. And so, okay, good night, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you both, and God bless.
God bless you, Don.
And God bless America.
Okay. Bye. Right. Good night.
Mm-hmm.